Look at all the angry people. Look at all the angry people. Richard B. Cheney swears at Pat Lay in public like so much hot air. Insists he and Bush care, waits for the weapons, still thinks Iraq was a threat to the U.S. homeland. I can't understand all the Bush appointees. Where do they all come from? All the angry people, where do they all belong? Rabbit and Coulter, writing the words to a book that reflects a strange fear. Who would come near? Look at her whining, blaming opponents and damning up dubious foe. Is it for show? All the right-wing parrots, where do they all come from? All the angry people, where do they all belong? Look at all the angry people. Look at all the angry people. Ambassador Bolton hates the UN, but now he is a part of it all. He's got some gall, push the divider, renominates right-wing judges, no change in his tone. And he's not alone, all the angry people, where do they all come from? All the angry people, where do they all belong?
You're listening to The Andy Fin Show, centrally located in America, on the TAFS radio network.
We are back on The Andy Fin Show, and I've got some more light news, but playing the song Angry People, words by yours truly, and vocals and production by John Clark, an audio production specialist and professor of telecommunications at the University of Kentucky in Lexington, Kentucky. And listening to that and listening to the verse, Bush the Divider renominates right-wing judges, no change in his tone. And he's not alone. There's an interesting analysis in the Washington Post today, I think it was. And I don't have it right in front of me, so I'm going to, I guess I'm going to make it up. No, I'm going to free associate a little, but I think I got the gist of this. So the Fourth Circuit is the local area here, Virginia, Maryland, D.C., and maybe a little bit beyond that. And the battles over the Fourth Circuit go back, well, certainly at least to the Clinton era, when the Republicans refused to confirm several Clinton nominees to the Fourth Circuit. There's usually about, I don't know if there's 11 or 15, yeah, there's 15 judges or something on the Fourth Circuit. And there's usually three or four vacancies. And mostly they can handle the workload, but when the workload gets heavy and they drop a couple more judges, it's time to make sure you got a full complement or close to it. Well, the Republicans refused to put votes to let Clinton's people come up for a vote. And so when Bush got in, the Democrats also were willing to block Bush's nominees, at least the more conservative ones. And, of course, they were accused of obstruction, but that's exactly what the Republicans were doing to Bill Clinton. So not only were there vacancies, now the Fourth Circuit has been quite conservative. Michael Luttig was on there. Well, as long as a couple of other conservative judges. And two or three of these guys are vacating those posts for different reasons. And the concern among conservatives is that it will go, what the way they put it was, center left. Center seems good to me for judges. You know, that's my theory. I never want liberal judges. I never want conservative judges. Because when you think about the world of paradigms, you want a judge whose paradigm is very middle of the road. Because seeing the world through the lenses of an arch conservative and an arch liberal, that's a skewed view of the world. And you don't want a judge looking at the world through skewed lenses. You want them to be as balanced as you can. And then they can make decisions not out of ideology, but out of law. In any case, there was this whole thing about the Fourth Circuit. But what it pointed out was that, as my song says, Bush the divider renominates right-wing judges, no change in his tone. What he did right after the 2004 election was he renominated two or three of these judges that the Democrats had already, well, I say turned down. They didn't have an up or down vote on the Senate floor, which is what the Republicans are always screaming about, as the Democrats screamed during the Clinton era. But what they did do was bottle them up in committee, and they don't have the votes to get them out of committee. So the Bush administration actually made a tactical error here, because now they've lost control of the Senate. And not only aren't they going to get those guys through, they aren't going to get more moderate guys through who are still right of center. Bush is going to have to do some horse trading. If he gives them one left of center judge, he'll get a right of center judge kind of a thing. But the Democrats don't have to let judges through, and they can slow down this process as the Republicans did during the 90s. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. But Bush would have been way ahead, Republicans would have been way ahead, if he had filled some of these nominees with candidates he could have got through. There are responsible, reasonable conservatives that the Democrats in Congress would have voted for or would have allowed through. And so he made a tactical error, because their days of appointing the judges they want are over with the Democrats in charge of the Senate. And also, like Michael Luttig, this arch conservative that Bush wanted to elevate, and that's been bottled up, he resigned from the court last, I don't know if it was May or June or when, I think it was May of 2006. Bush has yet to announce a replacement for him. You know, the big battle that goes on is, Democrats make Bush wait longer for his judges than Republicans made Clinton wait. If I were president, I'd do the vetting and get those nominations done. I'd make it a top priority. I'd have a whole group of people working on it. And I'd get those nominations in the pipeline, because even if the other party or the Congress refuses to act on them, at least then you've got it on paper that you nominated 20, 40, 60 people for these positions, and that they were held up for an average of, 1.2 years, whatever it ends up being. But I think he's foolish to leave those open, but every president seems to do it. I don't get it. In any case, let me move back to some lighter stuff. I couldn't believe this item from Sydney, Australia, the end of last week. I'm just going to read it directly out of the AP listing here, because it just blows my mind. Quote, Australian counterterrorism, yes, let's see if I can talk. Australian counterterrorism police fear rogue elements in the country's military may have sold rocket launchers and explosives to criminals and possibly terrorists, the Sydney Morning Herald reported Friday. Now, I'm not going to read any more of the story than this. Except to say that 9 anti-tank weapons were stolen from the army for use within Australia. So what's interesting is rogue elements in the country's military stole these weapons. Well, I guess you could have one or two people that would think they could get away with that in an army. But can you imagine this about the United States? People talk about rogue elements in the army. No, I mean, in Iraq, we talk about rogue elements in the military, right? That's these death squads. Or Augusto Pinochet had rogue elements. Or Fatah or Hamas may have rogue elements. But the U.S. military or the Australian military, rogue elements? I mean, I guess that's what they'd say the Abu Ghraib people were, rogue elements. But really, they're just misbehaving at that point. I just think it's bizarre that they've got this is like out of a James Bond movie. Remember those old James Bond movies where if it wasn't Spectre that was trying to cause the Russians to fight with the Soviets to fight with the U.S., it was some Russian general that was trying to steal weapons, and it just, it's a little too fanciful, but there it was in the news. And a little bit of sports. You know, I don't care very much for talking about Terrell Owens. T.O., as you may know, has been in the center of controversy. The Philadelphia Eagles had had enough of his antics, and they cut him, essentially, let him go, even though he's a high-priced guy and one of the best receivers in baseball. In fact, he may be leading the league right now in some categories, or one category, I'm not sure. But he's having a great year for the Dallas Cowboys. And it turns out that a cornerback for the Atlanta Falcons, D'Angelo Hall, talked in the post-game interview about the fact that Terrell Owens spit in his face during the game on Sunday. And Hall said, quote, "I lost all respect for the guy. That's like the number one thing in the National Football League. You don't spit in another grown man's face." It's okay to spit in a child's face, of course, or a woman's, but a grown man, no. That's disrespect, and we do not diss our fellow players in the NFL. Well, the mind reels with sarcastic replies, but I could see why you'd lose respect for a guy when he spits in your face. And what is this, the Merchant of Venice? Anyway, Terrell Owens admits he did it. He said, "I got frustrated and I apologize for that. It was a situation where he kept bugging me and getting in my face." Oh, well, then spit away. Now, the reason I'm covering this is not because of all this. This is all meaningless drivel in the life of Terrell Owens. He will be fined and probably heavily. But get this. Now, you may, or if you know anything about sports, you may know that Jerry Jones is the owner of the Dallas Cowboys. Now, he's a flamboyant owner, I guess you would say. But he revealed after the game that Terrell Owens was told by doctors 3 weeks ago that the finger injury that he suffered in practice needed to undergo immediate surgery that would end his season. Or if he didn't do it, if he didn't have the surgery now, he may well be unable to move that finger above the affected joint for the rest of his life. And Owens opted to continue playing. Now, there's only a week or two left in the NFL season. And then we got the playoffs and the Super Bowl. And Dallas is 9-5, I think, or something. So they're going to the playoffs. And they got a good team. I don't know they're going to go to the Super Bowl. But there's no standout. Well, actually, there are some standout teams this year that have great records. But there's no team that's considered the dominant force. So who knows? Dallas could go all the way. So maybe that's why Terrell Owens is playing. But so he's going to give up the use of his finger for the rest of his, part of his finger for the rest of his life. You know, maybe that's a good thing if Terrell Owens can't use that finger. Actually, I don't know which finger it is. But let me point this out. He went on to say, I'm sorry, Jerry Jones went on to say, after Owens opted to give up the tip of his finger, not worry about losing his finger, and play for the rest of the season for this owner, Jerry Jones was quoted as saying, quote, "I was sensitive to and impressed by how he made the decision." Now, there may have been much more that went on and that Terrell Owens said, you know, "I could do this, but it'd be selfish. I want to do the right thing for the team." I don't know. But I can see why the owner would like that logic. In any case, I just thought that was kind of strange, but that's the world of sports. You don't want to spend too much time on that. And then it turns out the state of Virginia now has a rocket launch pad. There's a Virginia spaceport on Wallops Island, Virginia, out by the shore. That's always where you put the space stuff, of course, in case you blow something up, it can fall in the ocean. But last Saturday, a four-stage Minotaur rocket took off, the first one to take off from Wallops Island, and it launched a satellite. And it all went successful. It was a early morning launch, and if you go out to the shore, you could see it. I didn't go out to see it. But I just thought that was interesting that the Virginia spaceport is now open for business. And it's right here in my state. Cool. Well, let me move on a little bit to something a little closer to politics. So, let's see. The state of Virginia... I'm sorry, no, the state of New Jersey, not where I live now, where I used to live, has just vowed to allow same-sex unions. The legislature voted last week to create civil unions, but they won't use the word marriage, which is, of course, my solution to this problem. If you haven't heard it, this is a real simple solution, except that the Karl Roves of the world, he's a divider, not a multiplier. And Karl Rove is using the wedge issues when he can, and certainly the gay issue is as wedgy as it gets. And so they would like to keep this issue alive. They have no interest in settling it, but the solution is simple. The church owned the term marriage originally, and governments took it over. We should give it back to the church. Did you know that if you get married in France, among other countries, you have two services if you're religious? The state recognizes the marriage or the civil union when you have a ceremony at the courthouse. And it's quite official. They don't rush through it. It's quite somber, and for a lot of couples, that's the only ceremony. So there's reflection on the importance of the act and the importance of staying together and all of that. But then you go around the corner to the local church and you get married there in a church. So I was at a wedding in France of 2000, I think it was, the year 2000. And my friends were first married in front of a judge, and I was invited to that, although it was a very small ceremony. And then we went to the Catholic church around the corner and had a ceremony a couple hours later. And then you go to the reception. I forget what time the reception started. I think it was a morning wedding, so I think we were at the reception by 2 or... No, it must have been later. It must have been 3 or 4, because I think we started eating at 5. And the band started playing somewhere between 11 and 12 o'clock. And then... Oh, they had played on and off before then, but the real band came in late. And then I left at... I don't know if it was 4 o'clock or 5 o'clock in the morning. I was told it would go all night. I left at 4 or 5 when there were people still dancing, although a lot of people had already left. And the French know how to throw a wedding, let me tell you. So in any case, back to New Jersey, the solution to the gay marriage problem is to allow civil unions, but not marriage, and turn the term marriage back to the churches. That way, gays would never get married in any church that wants to forbid it, because they will have the right to forbid it within their church. So if someday the Methodists or the Unitarians say we'll have gay marriages, then fine, they can do that. And then it reflects on their church, however it reflects, good or bad, depending on your position. But the church would own the term marriage. And of course, we'd have to change thousands of laws in this country, but we'd start referring to them as civil unions for the legal rights that are involved. And render unto Caesar the things that are Caesar, and unto God the things that are God's. Like marriage. And let's see. Oh, I guess I'm going to move on and cover a little bit of politics here. So the actually, let me do it this way. Let's take a break, and when we come back, I'm going to go on and do a little bit on politics.